It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Leave your phone alone till you get home. That's the message a group of school kids at the Indian Community School have for their slightly older peers, as well as adults who live and drive them around. Nine students put the PSA together in 2017 as part of the one-day media camp sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Transportation's Intertribal Task Force. Ariana Fuller was one of the people who created the PSA. She's an eighth grader at Indian Community School in Franklin. Ariana, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us.
And she's here with the head of the Indian Community School, Jason Dropic. Jason, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
We have two Jasons on today, so I'm going to have to say your full names. We're talking with Wisconsin State Patrol Inspector Jason Dangle. Jason Dangle, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I just need to know, Ariana, I said your name correctly?
Yep.
Okay. And Jason Dangle, how do I say your last name? Did I say that correctly?
Yes, ma'am. You're correct.
Okay, great. Yay. So I want to start off by playing this public service announcement.
Oh, no. Get it. I'm calling.
No.
What?
Yeah. Not sharing.
Get your feet off the seat.
We'll make them share.
You're taking up half the seat.
Shut up.
Knock it off. I'm on the phone and I'm trying to talk. Be quiet.
Mom?
Leave your phone alone till you get home.
Okay. That was kind of scary, to be perfectly honest. Ariana, this was about distracted driving, and we all think of this as texting while driving, but you guys thought of this as in terms of be quiet when you're in the car. Mom has to concentrate. And also, don't call. Don't even talk on the phone while driving. What made you come up with this concept?
There was a brainstorming session when we first began filming. And it was just kind of a brainstorm. And we were all trying to think of ideas until we found this one.
And you found this one. And you said filming, so this is a video PSA that you made.
Yes.
And how long did it take you to do it?
It only took us one day.
Wow. You shot it in one day. And what's been the reaction since you've done this?
A couple people have actually come up to me and said, "Hey, are you from that one commercial?" And I'm like, "Yeah."
That's cool. So you were in the commercial. We just hear it, so we didn't see it. You were actually in the commercial?
Yep.
Jason Dangle, I found it interesting that we're not just talking about texting while driving. To you, what qualifies as distracted driving?
Distracted driving, it encompasses much more than just texting and phone use. We see things such as people applying makeup in the morning, they're eating their breakfast on the way to work. Animals in your car. We've seen people reading books, newspapers while they're driving.
Well,
even something as simple as singing along with the radio takes your 100% of your focus is not on the road anymore. So that even counts as distracted driving. Something as simple as that.
How much of a challenge is this? How many accidents do you see that it's caused by distracted driving?
Well, basically, there were over 119,000 distracted driving crashes in the past 5 years. Nearly one-third of those caused injuries, and over 454 people were killed in those incidents.
And how much does this affect young people?
It affects young people a lot more than it does older folks, just because the younger folks don't have the driving experience under their belt. Not to say it's okay for the older generation to be distracted, but it is more difficult for our younger drivers.
We are talking about a PSA that some students at the Indian Community School made. They made it last year, actually, talking about the dangers of distracted driving. We just had that PSA play. Jason Dropic, you are the head of the Indian Community School. What did this experience mean for the students?
It was a great opportunity when we were first approached by the Intertribal Task Force. It really just kind of thought that it would be a good project for our students to get engaged in learning. They would be able to kind of problem solve and address and propose some possible solutions to problems in our community. We looked at some information and data and looking at the number of deaths in our native communities for people between the ages of 1 and 44. Driving and vehicle accidents was the number one cause. And so we really were trying to focus on how can we help our communities. And so at that time, engaging the students in problem solving and learning about media and then having them to come up with the idea and film it, star in it, it was really a great learning opportunity as well as a way to give back to our community. We didn't really anticipate it going statewide. That was a great unintended consequence from this project. But when we were able to show the PSA to the Department of Transportation, was just very well received. They stood and clapped, and the smiles on the kids' faces, that sense of accomplishment was a tremendous gift for us.
I'll bet. So this was part of a media day where kids learned how to make media. Was it around this particular theme, or did just this group of kids decide to do this theme of safety while driving?
So there has been other projects that were like this, and the focus was, you know, how do we help impact in a positive way vehicle fatalities and accidents in our tribal communities? And so they took on the brainstorming about, well, what do we think is a current issue that we would like to see solved in our students' own lives? They obviously see their parents or relatives at times not attending to the road. They see what happens in the news in terms of people being distracted, whether it be from texting. And commonly, you know, we think of other ways that people are being injured in vehicle accidents, whether it's drunk driving or other factors. And they really wanted to focus on something that they could have a direct impact on. They're in the cars. They're driving with their family members and others. They're going to be at a driving age shortly.
Mm-hmm.
And so they really came up with that message so that it would hit home to some of their classmates and other schoolmates as well as their families.
So, Ariana, how old are you? You're in eighth grade, right?
Yep.
So how old are you?
I'm 13.
You're 13, so you're going to be driving in a few years. Do you watch your parents drive? Are you taking tips? And do you do things like warn them when you think that they're being distracted?
Well, my parents, ever since they've seen the PSA, they've, not that they had been on their phones, but now they just take extra precaution.
So you have taught your parents a lesson here by making this PSA?
Yeah.
And have you, you're going to be driving, and what is the kind of number one thing that you're looking at as you're thinking of getting behind the wheel of a car yourself?
I think that I'm probably not going to have my phone in a place that's visible.
Mm.
So maybe in, like, the glove compartment or something, because I don't want to be distracted while I'm driving.
And that is the message that you took away from this, right? Don't have your phone next to you, because it lights up and it's distracting. It may buzz or make a noise, and it's distracting. Just put it away. Put it in the back seat. Put it in the glove compartment. Something like that, right?
Yeah.
You made this video. Have you made more PSAs since then? Or other videos? Did this get you to really like making films?
Well, I've always been like a theater person, and I've always liked making videos. So it's not really changed me, but at the same time it has.
We have been talking about a video that a bunch of school kids at the Indian Community School made, the Indian Community School in Franklin. You just heard Ariana Fuller. She was one of the kids who made the video. And we've also been talking to Jason Dropick, who heads the school, and Jason Dangle, who is a Wisconsin State Patrol inspector. Thank you all for being with us today. It's The Morning Show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We have been talking to some people from the Indian Community School in Franklin. A bunch of 7th and 8th graders last year created a PSA at a media day camp. They chose to make their PSA about distracted driving. Ariana Fuller was one of those students. She joins us today, along with the head of the school, Jason Dropick, and State Patrol Inspector Jason Dangle. What would you do if you could create a PSA about any issue? If you could create a PSA about distracted driving, do you make sure when you're driving that your phone is away from you? 800-642-1234 or ideas at WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. Jason Dangle, are you having other Media Day camps? Jason Dropick, are you having other Media Day camps at the school? And what does that? What are you focusing on this year?
So we're just still in the planning stages as we look at it. So part of the project, the PSA, really raised our awareness of how the students can affect change in their communities, and in particular, looking even at our own school community. What behaviors are we seeing in our school that we would like to change? The response from this campaign with distracted driving has really brought so many positive results and attention for the impact that students can have on the world around them. So we're looking at the next, what are our concerns as a school that we would really like to address so students can be engaged in solving those problems, and then continuing to expand even further into their communities.
Jason,
nothing yet's decided.
Okay, nothing's yet. Yeah, this is Jason Dangle. What is the value of your organization partnering with schools?
The benefit is this gets the word out to the younger drivers, whether they're driving already in high school, and even in the case of Ariana and her classmates, it gets the message out before they even start driving, so we can instill some of those positive behaviors into these folks before they actually get out on the road.
So you're looking at safe driving. It's not just distracted driving. What else would you like to see PSAs made about?
Well, it all kind of ties into highway safety. It'd be nice to see PSAs on seatbelts, some of the things we see every day out on the road, watching your speed, watching your following distance behind other vehicles, especially now with winter coming upon us. You're going to want to increase those following distances. It's not going to be the same stopping distance as you have now in summer when it's 80 degrees and sunny out.
Interesting. Ariana, you made this this very powerful PSA. You worked with a group of, what, 9 people?
Yeah, about that.
About that. What was your role in making this? You were an actor. Did you write any of it?
No, there were certain groups of people, so there were actors and then, like, script writers.
Mm.
And the script writers kind of told us what to say and stuff like that.
So, but the script writers were your fellow students, correct?
Yep.
When you came up with this, you did this in a day. This is fascinating to me. So you came up with the idea, you brainstormed, you came up with the idea, the script writers went to work. How long did it take them to make this 30-second script?
I'd say that it took them about, like, a half hour, maybe an hour. And during that time, the actors were in another room, and we were practicing just acting and, like, stuff like that.
Right. So you knew what it was about, so you were kind of improvising around, oh, my God, if I have an accident, or if my mom has an accident, right?
Yeah, it's like improv.
It's like improv, which is really fun. Jason Dangle, there are specific laws about distracted driving in the state of Wisconsin. Do you think those laws are up to date? I know that there was a lot of catching up that states had to do once cell phones came into use.
Yep, I think we're looking pretty good right now. Some of our key laws that I can get into. Pretty much all drivers are prohibited from texting while driving. Violations of that law can result in a citation of $188 and 4 points against your license.
Hmm.
Something recent, all drivers are now prohibited from using a handheld cell phone when driving through a construction zone.
Ah.
There, too, it's a $163 fine and 4 points. And the thing with probationary license or instructor permits, you're prohibited from using a handheld or hands-free phone. And that, again, is $163 or 4 points against them.
Distracted driving has gone down in the state since we've put in these laws?
I don't know that it's gone down. We're still averaging over the last 5 years a ratio of about 4 to 1 distracted driving accidents as compared to alcohol-related crashes.
Wow. You mean there's more distracted driving than there is alcohol?
Yes, ma'am.
That's a fascinating statistic, because we can easily put down our phones. We can easily not drink and drive. Also, Jason Dropic, talk to me about what your school is about. I mean, this is an experience that not all middle school age kids get to go through. Do you focus on these kinds of sort of hands-on experiences at your school?
That's definitely our goal. We know that students learn best, when they're engaged, and so part of providing experiences and opportunities is making sure that they are seeing themselves as problem solvers and that they have an impact on the world. It's not just sitting and reading a textbook to kind of learn concepts. It's really working together, collaborating. That's kind of what we see happening in the world and what we want to prepare our students for. So PSAs or other experiences where students get to really engage in trying to change things around them is something that we strive to do. We want to continue to do better. Our students enjoy it, and they need these skills as they continue to go out past leaving our school once they're done in eighth grade.
We're going to do some call-outs here. Have you ever made a video before? When was the youngest that you made it? What do you think about distracted driving? Have you ever been driving and had your kids say to you, Mom, Dad, put down the phone, pay attention? On the other hand, have you been driving and had kids being crazy like they were in this video and fighting and distracting you from being able to be safe? 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. I want to get back to this. How many people on the road are distracted? Jason Dangle, more people are distracted using cell phones and what have you than are drunk drivers. Are there enough people, highway patrolmen, to actually enforce these laws to catch this? And what are patrolmen looking for when they see cars on the road?
Basically, that's exactly what we're looking for. We're observing the drivers, as we're coming up behind them or as we're passing them and they're coming towards us. We're observing the driver behaviors. Are they wearing their seatbelt? We only have a fraction of a second to make that decision and that glance, but the eyes tell a lot. You can tell if someone's hiding their cell phone on their lap because their head's down. They're not
right.
They're not looking up. So we do see a lot of it.
One of the things, I just moved here and I spent a lot of time looking at maps, trying to figure out my way around Madison and then other parts of Wisconsin. What do you tell people in terms of maps and trying to figure out where to go? What's the best practice there?
Plan your route before you leave. That's the best option. You don't want to be looking at that piece of paper while you're driving. Just as you don't want to rely 100% on your GPS. Those aren't constantly updated to different roads that are closed.
Tell me about it.
Things like that. So you'll get distracted that way too, because your GPS is going to tell you to turn or not turn. So definitely plan your route before you leave.
Distracted driving is not just about having a phone in your hand or having kids yelling in the backseat. Sometimes it's about getting in your car with something on your mind. Are there tips and tricks that we can use to kind of clear our heads before we start the car?
Yep. Basically, just take those few deep breaths, that autogenic breathing. Just relax before you get behind the wheel. You don't want to take that stress and anger with you.
That is true, especially on the road. We have been talking. You just actually heard Jason Dangle. He's a Wisconsin State Patrol inspector. You also heard from Ariana Fuller, who is an eighth grader at Indian Community School in Franklin. Ariana, what is the next thing you're making?
I don't really think that there is anything planned yet.
Okay.
But I'm looking forward to whatever comes.
What are you interested in?
like these PSAs, it feels good to make a change.
You just heard Ariana Fuller. She's an eighth grader at Indian Community School in Franklin. We also have been talking to Jason Dropick. He is the head of the Indian Community School in Franklin. All of you, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. It was a hot day on May 29th in Randallstown, Maryland. 19-year-old Jordan McNair, an offensive lineman for the Maryland Terrapins, was having trouble catching his breath after doing sprints during practice. He started having a seizure, according to reporting from ESPN. By the time he got to the hospital, his body temperature had reached 106 degrees. He died 2 weeks later. Washington Post sports writer Sally Jenkins pulled no punches when she wrote about McNair's death. She called out college football culture as prehistoric and said that the deranged college coaching mentality must stop. Sally Jenkins is with us this morning. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So, prehistoric coaches, deranged coaching mentality, unhinged dictators. You're pretty angry about this, aren't you?
Well, I mean, a 19-year-old is dead.
Right. You wrote the word kill, and you specifically said that college football coaches and the culture of college football is killing their players. Talk to me about that.
Well, if you look at the NFL lost a player named Corey Stringer back in 2001, and it did what any organization should do. It investigated the causes of his death from heat stroke exhaustion on the field, and they haven't had a death similar since. They put in some very common sense procedures. Heat stroke is manageable with some ice and a thermometer. There's absolutely no excuse in this day and age to lose an athlete in those circumstances. So, you know, the University of Maryland was operating in a really crude and an unacceptable way in driving these players through sprints in the heat without some basic precautions. Not only has the NFL not had a death this way since 2001, but the NCAA college football community exceeds the deaths in high school football, where you would assume, first of all, the population is much larger and the coaches are much less exposed to the most modern sports science and basic medical precautions. And so the NCAA has a problem that it doesn't exist at any other level of football. And the reason it exists is because college coaches, as we've seen, particularly at Ohio State right now with Urban Meyer, college coaches are simply unaccountable. No college president and no board of trustees has proven that they can get a grip on these authoritarian tyrants who run their programs in any way that they want to and absolutely answer to nobody.
We are talking to Sally Jenkins about deaths in college football in NCAA after the death of Jordan McNair, who suffered heat stroke during practice on May 29th. We're taking your calls on this. Have you ever been through a practice that you barely got through? Have you suffered heat stroke? What do you think about coaches who run their players almost to death or to death in some cases? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. I want to go back to Jordan McNair for a moment. What happened to him?
Well, he was running a series of 110-yard sprints, and he essentially began to stagger, and his head rolled back, and a Maryland athletic trainer started screaming, "Drag his ass across the field." He obviously demonstrated that he was in serious physical distress, and yet nobody apparently took his temperature, paused the workout, iced him down, and did the things that, you know, heat stroke is 100% survivable with some basic precautions and operations. You know, when a young man or a young woman starts to show that sort of distress, you immediately check their core temperature and ice them down. If any of that had been done, he would be alive. There's no question about it. Maryland has taken responsibility for that. But I think what's more important is the attitude. You know, the heat did not kill Jordan McNair. What killed Jordan McNair was an overheated attitude on the part of coaching staffs that thought such a workout was helpful in the first place. You know, 27 football players have died in conditioning drills since 2001, which is the last time the NFL lost a player like this. I mean, that is a really startling statistic, and it tells you what sort of crude knuckle-dragging mentality we're dealing with here in college. It's been 17 years since the NFL learned better, and yet college coaches have not.
So do college coaches, are you saying the college coaches see this as weakness?
I think there's a mentality and an attitude that really needs to be curbed. They see themselves as the makers of men. They're taking high school players and quote, toughening them up. And I think that they are doing so in a very unsophisticated way. The most athletic trainers would tell you, I mean, there was a wonderful piece that I quoted in my column from a University of Oklahoma athletic trainer named Scott Anderson. He calls these sorts of workouts not only outdated, but he says they represent a, quote, irrational intensity. And I think that's exactly what it is. Sports science now, they understand that you don't drive a young man to the brink of organ failure to toughen him up. You create very sport-specific, efficient workouts that build his strength and build his stamina and build his endurance in specific, appropriate, task-oriented ways. Jordan McNair was an offensive lineman, and he wasn't going to have to run any 110-yard sprint ever in football. It was a nonsensical workout in the first place that wasn't developing anything that was useful for his role in football. So it was a completely pointless exercise in the first place. One of the things that's of real concern to athletic trainers and medical personnel is that a lot of times college coaches use these workouts as punishment, or they use them to drive players out of the program so they can free up the scholarship. They want to make it so miserable for a young man that he will leave or he will quit. I don't know what the goal was in Jordan McNair's case, but training him for his football-specific task was not the point.
So ESPN has reported that there was a culture of abuse from coaches at Maryland, particularly strength and conditioning coach Rick Court, who was in charge of the practice on May 29th. According to ESPN, extreme verbal abuse of players occurs often. Players are routinely the targets of obscenity-laced epithets meant to mock their masculinity when they're unable to complete a workout or weightlift, for example. One player was belittled verbally after passing out during a drill. So he's actually, this coach has actually had people pass out before. Players have been forced to eat to the point of vomiting. Who is supposed to oversee this?
Well, the head coach, DJ Durkin, who specifically hired Rick Court and said, you know, he was the most vital part of the staff that I wanted to put together. We work hand in glove. We think exactly alike on all of these issues. So Rick Court is simply an expression of the head coach, DJ Durkin, who sets the culture and controls the culture. Now, DJ Durkin also has quite a few supporters on the team. It's unclear to me whether he, in fact, was a bully or created a toxic culture. That's for the University of Maryland's investigative committee to discern from interviewing players and staff. But, you know, we have some very basic evidence in front of us. We have the dead body of a 19-year-old boy. So at a minimum, you can say that DJ Durkin and his staff were profoundly uninformed, profoundly reckless, and profoundly ignorant. I mean, those things we can say for sure, and profoundly responsible for this.
DJ Durkin has not spent his entire career at Maryland. Has this kind of thing happened at the other schools he was at?
You know, he's been everywhere. He's been at Stanford, Michigan, Notre Dame, Florida. he is not an outlier in NCAA Division I college football. Mm. He is NCAA football. There are a lot of other men like him in college football. His mentality is not an outlying mentality. That's the problem here, is that DJ Durkin is not an isolated instance. He happens to have gone too far and caused a death. But as I say, there have been 27 other deaths since 2001, and there have been 40 deaths total in the NCAA across all sports in conditioning drills. Now, again, we're talking conditioning, quote, conditioning. We're not even talking about games.
Right.
We're not talking about the trauma of an on-field collision in competition. We're talking about practices and drills here. It's insane.
We are talking to Sally Jenkins about the death of Jordan McNair and over-conditioning, pushing people to the brink. I want to know, the Maryland administration, what do they say about this? Is Rick Court still employed? And is DJ Durkin's job on the line?
DJ Durkin is on administrative leave. Mm. He is the subject of two ongoing investigations, one into how Maryland handled Jordan McNair once he appeared to be in distress during this drill, and then the second is a larger investigation basically looking at the, quote, culture of DJ Durkin's program to discern if it's toxic or not.
And Rick Court?
And Rick Court is gone. He was out. He's out, as well he should have been. And so was a trainer who basically said drag his ass across the field.
And from what I understand, there was time that went by when they first started seeing Jordan McNair. Yes, go ahead.
That's a complicated question, and that's a subject of the investigation. There are some conflicting reports that, according to Jordan McNair's family, an hour elapsed before ambulances were called and he was airlifted to the hospital. And by the time he got to the hospital, his body temperature was 106. Presumably his body temperature had actually come down by the time they got him to the hospital.
Wow.
So there's some question. Now, the University of Maryland has said that there's some dispute about those facts, actually. And so we'll see what the outcome of the investigation is. But according to the Jordan McNair family attorney, something close to an hour elapsed between the signs of distress and the actual arrival at the hospital.
So you
just need to know what happened in that hour.
Yes.
And obviously what didn't happen was he was not iced down, and presumably his temperature was not taken.
We are talking to Sally Jenkins about the death of offensive lineman Jordan McNair. He was in a Maryland Terrapins practice when he had a seizure and died 2 weeks later. We're taking your calls on this. What do you think of the culture of college football and the culture in NCAA athletics in general? 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're going to be back with more with Sally Jenkins in a moment. It's The Morning Show.
Taking a look at the WPR weather forecast for today. Increasing clouds with rain possibly heavy at times. There's also a chance of isolated thunderstorms, highs in the 70s. Saturday, cloudy skies, a good chance of rain and thunderstorms, especially in the morning. Some heavy rain is possible, highs from the mid-70s to low 80s. Sunday, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and storms in the south and highs from the mid-70s to low 80s. More rain possible on Labor Day.
Coming up at 8, the rains in Wisconsin won't stop, and neither will the floods. Baraboo is the latest area to deal with sandbagging and overflowing rivers. We're going to get an update in about 12 minutes on The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The death in June of Maryland Terrapins offensive lineman Jordan McNair has prompted investigations by sports journalists and others and a scathing rebuke of college football's toxic culture by Washington Post sports columnist Sally Jenkins. We are talking to Sally Jenkins for the rest of this hour, and we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. Sally, I want to get get into this, you talked about the NFL, which hasn't had a death since Corey Stringer, who played for the Minnesota Vikings, died in 2001. They changed their procedures, and they've been using more sports science. Talk to me about what that sports science is.
Well, it's essentially all about efficiency. You know, how do you train for your specific sport and your specific task in your sport? So, for instance, the rest-to-work ratio in football is about 1 to 8. So one measure of work is followed by about 8 beats of rest. So if you're watching an NFL game, you know, you can tell that the players have very short bursts of activity, and then there's quite a bit of time for play calling and then lining up for the next job that they perform on the field. And so what you do in sports science, what they try to do is they optimize that sort of thing in training to prepare players for what their actual job is going to be. Just like NASA astronauts, you know, you don't, when you're going to do a spacewalk, it's a bit similar to cross-country skiing. An astronaut in space is going to be expending a certain amount of energy, but he's also going to be required to perform tasks that are really, really, really precise. So how do you train for that? Well, it's the same in sports science. And so what they try to do is design workouts that optimize your body's ability to perform those tasks on demand. And it's called peaking. It's called recovery. You know, all of those things really matter. And they've gotten really great at it. Calibration is one of the real marvels of calibrating the human body, is one of the great marvels of athletics these days.
Okay, so college coaches are on campuses where these things, the science is being perfected, one would think. How come they're not practicing this kind of specific conditioning science?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, Maryland prides itself on being one of the great research universities. They advertise that about themselves all the time. The obstacle here is, again, these fiefdoms, the control that is exercised by college head coaches who are signed to these multi-million-dollar contracts and who really only answer to a small handful of incredibly wealthy alum who are the real bosses of athletic departments. And they're protected and sheltered by these wealthy alum. In fact, a bunch of them just wrote a letter to the University of Maryland yesterday defending DJ Durkin. And so it's very difficult for anyone to exercise any real oversight over the program. University presidents, you know, I think fear their wealthiest donors.
Okay, so we've got some callers here I want to get to. But first I want to ask you this question. Is this the time to tackle unions? It strikes me that the NFL was able to make change because its players have power. Should college players have that kind of power too?
Well, that's the big question. They certainly don't have any rights. And the reason I use the word kill is because I don't know what else you call it when a tyrant forces captive young men to run themselves to death. And that is the basic setup. That is the power dynamic in college football today.
We are taking your calls here for Sally Jenkins. We've got Gene from Shawna. Gene, welcome to the program.
Hello. I want to say that my father was a coach. My brother was a coach. I'm now 74 years old. I lived through it. But it's ingrained in them that you do not show hurt. You fight through it. For instance, I'm going to give a couple examples. One of them is I'm a little girl. My hand is in the car door, stuck in the car door. I mean, it's in the car door. And I was taught, I mean, you do not cry, you do not show anything, and you stand there, take a deep breath, and you speak respectfully and look decently, and then they will open the car door at a given time and just walk away.
Wow.
Now, yeah, wow. Okay. On two separate occasions, I was unconscious. I'm laying there. And I'm trying to, I was maybe 12 or 13. I'm trying to sit, I keep coming to, because I've been knocked unconscious a lot of times by this time. And I'm go back down, and I hear this voice saying, there's this man who I don't know, who saw me, who saw the accident, which wasn't an accident, who said, you have to call an ambulance, to my father. You have to call an ambulance. You have to call an ambulance. She's been unconscious too long. And my father just said, oh, that's enough. Get up. And I'm laying there, and he said, I said, get up. And I got up, and we walked all the way back to the car, which was across a field. And that is the way I was raised, but that's what they believe.
Yeah.
They believe you do not cry. They believe you fight through it. They believe that. And they believe everybody should learn that.
Jean, I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry. And that was an awesome story that you shared. Thank you for that. I'm going to get to Robin from Baraboo. Robin, welcome to the program.
Hi. I had a daughter who was on a crew team rowing in a California State University campus. And she called me distressed one day on her way to training and said, my back is hurting and I don't think I should do this training workout. And I said, well, just tell the coach you're not able to do it. And she said, no, we'll be ostracized. We won't get to have our spot in the boat for the next race. I mean, it was very much like the woman who was just on saying that you can't show any sign of weakness, or if you say there's an ache or pain, you're making it up and just being lazy. So she went ahead and did the workout and called me about 30 minutes later and crying and said, God, I'm still upset about it. She said, my back is hurt. I have to go to the hospital. She's now 30 years old, and she still has a serious injury to her back that props up from time to time. I didn't even know I was emotional about it, but it infuriates me to hear about this. And the culture, she felt like she couldn't say no, or she was going to be ostracized by the other rowers and also punished by the coach.
Robin, thank you for that. Sally Jenkins, it's not just college football. There is a mentality that borders on abusive in college sports in general.
Well, you know, these are just heartrending, heartbreaking stories, and they also make you just absolutely furious because it's the needlessness of it. It's not smart. It's not sophisticated coaching. I mean, I was very lucky to write 3 books with Pat Summitt. I mean, there's never been a greater coach in any area. And, you know, I watched her train her athletes quite a lot. I was around a great deal. And Pat always left this to the experts, the strength coaches and the athletic trainers. Her most trusted staff member was a wonderful athletic medical trainer named Jenny Moshak, who she just swore by. And if Jenny told her to back off, she backed off. She never used conditioning as punishment. She used it as a stamina and fitness builder appropriately for basketball. She used it to build some mental toughness. But when there was a disciplinary problem, she didn't drag a kid out and you know, run them into a coma. She benched them. I mean, the bench was always the biggest punishment for her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, early in her career, she actually, I take it back, she actually did use running as some punishment early in her career, but she quickly learned better. She herself had blown her knee and had physical problems. She herself had been a player, and she was always looking to maximize their stamina and yet preserve their bodies. I mean, what's so stupid about all of this is what does it help a coach if they're actually breaking down their players rather than building them up? What's so backward about all of this.
We have been talking to Sally Jenkins. She is an award-winning sports columnist for The Washington Post. Her recent piece is titled Prehistoric College Football Coaches Are Killing Players. It's past time to stop them. Sally, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And thank you to our callers. Those 2 stories were heartbreaking, and I appreciate you calling and sharing them. I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.